it's about that time, so I'd like to introduce Water Slickers.
Thank you all. So just like some other speakers, I'm more used to walking around, so staying stationary is going to be a tiny bit of a challenge for me. Welcome everyone. After lunch, I hope I can drag you through the after lunch dip. I'm Wouter Slegers. I was invited to talk a bit here about how CC and smart cards work. And so I'll spend a lot of time on that and then take the things that work in the smart card world and extrapolate that to the, let's say, the mobile application type world. We have these phones and we're starting to use them to do payments or, in my case, even open the door to my hotel room. And so these kind of devices are also starting to get evaluated under CC with quite a different time schedule than we're used to in the smart card and the hardware domain. So I'll bridge the two. For those of you who don't know me, I've been in this domain of high-end security for 20 plus years. Of these, at least 15 years in the Comcast area. So we went from the young person to the starting to get a bit gray person. But I still love and I still enjoy this world. So the grayest is just age in my case. So this, let's say 15 years are, 15, 20 years are roughly equally divided over three organizations, three flags I did work under. And I'm mentioning them here because they'll make a reappearance later. So I started off by making a silly comment to somebody at the NLNCSA, the Dutch National Communication Security Agency. And before I knew it, I was working behind a steel door. And working on evaluating products for the Dutch government, NATO, Department of Defense. The NLNCSA, you'll see that coming back again, is also the technical overseer of the Dutch CC scheme. And that's one of the schemes I do a lot of work with. So from there, I went commercial and went to what at that time was called TNO ITSF, and it's now Brightside. So when I joined this company, it was five people plus me, six, doing CC. Then we merged with the smart card part. At the time I left, about 7 years ago, it was 30, 40 people. And as far as I know now, there are 140 or so, and growing. So at Brightside, I did a lot of the very first evaluations and consultancy. So the very first e-passport, the very first smart card under the new CC 3.1, the CC that we're using now. The very first, and as far as I know, only part of a fighter jet, the first copier. So a lot of these first things. So after a while, I wanted to go independent. I did that, but not for long, because within a short amount of time, I was asked to become a commercial certifier under the Dutch scheme. So just to quickly summarize this, it's not that important, but in the Netherlands, the CC scheme, the oversight is just like all the schemes done by a national security agency. But to make it possible to scale quicker, they hire commercial certifiers like me to do the bulk of the work. It's still overseen by the government people, but if you're doing a smart card evaluation under the Dutch scheme, very likely it'll be under my oversight. So besides that commercial certification work, which is the bulk of my work, I also do a lot in training people and, again, these first never done before type projects, which will lead into my mobile work. So this gives you a bit of a background. For those of you, I see a few here that know me. Usually my presentations include a picture of my Vibram five-finger shoes and my dog. In this case, it's not. It will have pictures of me looking at my phone in places I really shouldn't be looking at the phone. Just giving a context. If you also don't know me, I really like interactive sessions. So please don't wait until the end to forget the question that you wanted to ask. Just immediately speak up and I'll weave it in as we go along. And I have some help with to keep within the time. Okay, so what are we going to talk about? So the bulk of my talk is going to be about smart cards and smart cards and CC evaluations. CC has been the way to look at smart cards to assure their high quality. And just to give you an impression, the picture on the left is a picture of one of the six walls that one of the developers has full of these certificates. At this point, I'm sort of wondering where they're going to put all of the rest that they're doing. But CC is big in the smart card world. And so in the flight here, I thought, okay, let's make an up-to-date assessment on just how big is CC in smart card domain. So I went to the portal, downloaded the overview, and selected on the category of IC and similar devices. And if you look at the beginning of the CC until now, it's about 50% of all certificates, without selecting them in any other way, is a smart card. And I'm only counting the ones that are listed as a smart card, not, for example, the TPMs, the Trusted Computing Platform modules, that are essentially a smart card in a different factor. So if, like me, you say, okay, an evaluation is an evaluation when somebody actually looked at the source code and preferably did a bit more than look on the internet for whether this product was already hacked, you're in this EEL4 plus category. And if you look at the EEL4 plus type evaluations, CC evaluations, 80%+ of them are smart cards. If you look at the ones that are explicitly list the highest attack potential, the strongest attacker, it's close to 90-100%. So smart cards are is the domain where we have a working version of high assurance and relatively high volume evaluations, right? In total, there are about 2,500 CC certificates on the portal now. About 1,500 of them are smart cards. So the bulk of my talk is, how do we do that? How do we make that work? I know in CC conference and this conference, from what I'm seeing, it's popular to talk about what is not working and complain a bit about it. But I want to focus a bit on what is working. Now, don't worry, it will include doing lots of hard work, but it is also fun. So, if you're more graphic, you can see that smart cards really are towards the high end of the evaluations. The low end evaluations are mostly because they were used as a trial project for somebody. So very often you'll have a EEL2 and you can just see from security target, this is one of the first evaluations that a scheme or a lab has done, and they just wanted to get some experience. So in smart card world, the requirement is EEL4 plus. Marketing has taken hold of this number, so the de facto practice for smart card evaluations is EEL5 plus. Moving towards 6, because higher number obviously is better. So how do we do that? Well, one of the things that makes smart cards work and so well accepted, one of the success factors, is that we're not just doing this for the government. A lot of work, evaluation, certification work that we're doing is because in the end there's a government requiring this. Well, that's obviously also true for smart cards, where we want to deploy these things in, let's say, an e-passport or a digital signature card or a tachograph or something like that. But these are also accepted and required from the credit card brands under EMVCO. And this is fairly unique, that there is a very big financial commercial stake also requiring this. So we can do CCE evaluations of the IC hardware and the underlying platforms and use them for both of these fields. So this is really a private-public cooperation. So how do we do that? Well, if you look at these entities, just to quickly say from the top left on, it's Germany, France, and the Netherlands, which is basically the three biggest smart card evaluating and certifying schemes. And there's also the UK scheme and several others that are ramping up for this. And these credit card brands. These people are all together talking about how we do evaluations, how do we rate an attack, how do we consider smart cards, what kind of stuff do we need to look at. And we do that in working groups, and one of the major ones, and it's this one, is JHAS, which talks about the attacks and the attack rating. Because in the end, evaluation is about determining whether something protects against an attacker of a certain strength. And so we need to know whether we have the same view on these ratings. But it's not just the certification bodies, it's also all the labs that do this work that are in there. And obviously also all the developers that work in this. Now, it's popular to present it in this way of the certifiers drive this, but essentially it was the developers who dragged everyone together 15 plus years ago and said, look, we need one standard set of evaluations. We can't go to every national and every credit card brand and get slightly different versions of the same base principle. Sit together, we'll make one standard. But to do this, all of these developers had to set aside competition on the requirements. They're still competing on how they fulfill these requirements, but at least they have a level playing field. Okay, this is what we need to do, and this is how we measure it. This is also true for these labs. They together, they're competitors, but they're sitting together to get a shared view on, okay, how do we look at this stuff? Certification bodies, we also sort of compete, if it's only for the bragging rights, right? We want to be the biggest. And if you look in the vertical line, there's a competition of interests. As a government or representing a government, you just want good quality. You don't really care how much that costs. It's not part of your cost estimate or time. If it's within the next few years, it's good enough. Developers, they want it yesterday. Right? So there's a competition of all of these things, and still we come together with 35 participants every 2 months and spend a full day, and it probably is going to be more than a day soon, discussing about new attacks and ratings and differences in how we approach things. And if you want to remember one thing that makes this work, it's this. Coming together, talking until we have a consensus, not until there is a slight majority that defines what the standard is. No, we come together, we talk until everyone says good enough. It's never perfect, but it is good enough. And it ends up with this picture. I like this picture a lot because it has several, in this case, Germans sitting next to each other. Competitors giving one central outward discussion on, okay, no, this is the level that we're working at. We might compete in our sales, we might compete in our functionality, our performance, but not in how we evaluate these things. So this also means that we don't spend a lot of time on voting. The only moment that we really vote is when there are multiple people who want to do, for example, leading this whole group or making the meeting notes, which is in my case me. And we do it the old-fashioned way, just on a piece of paper, counting them, and that's good enough. So the output of all of this work is I think a dozen in total documents. Quite a few of them are guidance on the CC portal. Some of them are also in the SOGIAS website. So SOGIAS is the organization in Europe that arranges mutual recognition between all the European countries up to EL7, the maximum level. So why are we doing all of this? In the end, we're still trying to assess whether something is weak or strong. That's the point of our certificate and the security evaluation. It's just to show this is good enough, this is strong enough. To do that, ideally, a lab or a certifier would have some sort of a magical view of the strength on each interface against each attack over all the configurations that a product has, all of these lines. That's a theory, right? But in theory, you could have those and then find the ones that are the weakest. Find the ones that are underneath this attack potential. So that line, that red line of what is the attack potential, is a very important one. It's very important to get a shared view on how do we look at an attack and how difficult do we judge such an attack. And just look at your own technical domain. You can imagine that you take two engineers and you ask, okay, how much time does it cost to make a buffer overflow? And one will say minutes and the other one will say half a year, right? You need some sort of alignment. Yeah, minutes because you already prepared everything. Months because you don't know anything about making a buffer overflow. So you have to align these things. So we spend a lot of time discussing these things. We have a new laser that we shoot on this chip. How expensive is it? It's not that expensive to buy, but it is really difficult to make it work well. How do we rate that? How much expertise does this cost? So, to make sure that our evaluation labs also consider all the different types of attacks, we cluster these attacks in about a dozen attack categories. And they are listed in these two documents that are a bit blurred on that screen, but it's the application of attack potential to smart cards, and there is the attack methods document. So one of these documents describes the general approach of rating, which is the old CC rating of identifying and then exploiting, measuring that. And the other one describes, okay, in very specific examples of doing a laser, how would a typical rating be? So these are discussion documents. Because that latter one sort of is a catalog that would be really useful for a beginner attacker to know. We keep that within the JHAS group. So the labs, the certification bodies, and the developers that are doing these evaluations, they get access to it. To be honest, it's not such a secret document, but it would be a really good training document for somebody. So, okay, give it to a student and look, come back with you, if you do these attacks. So in this way, we can get some, we have a way to communicate what is our shared value about what kind of things should be looked at and what is the rating that we do on this. In the end, and I'm going to say some dirty words here, these ratings are subjective. Any of these attacks that are interesting are subjective. You can discuss a lot, and we do discuss a lot, on does this take an expert or just a proficient person? If it's a proficient person, is it 1 or 3 months? So these kind of discussions, in the end, is based on our experience, but there is no perfect formula to put this in. But there is a consensus on how to look at this. So we get in the same bandwidth of doing these things. Sometimes we get challenged on these things. In this case, if I remember about 7 years ago, there was a presentation here in Washington area from Tarnowski, and he was looking at a chip and he said, look, I can hack this chip. This was a chip, or at least a series of chips, that passed our certifications. So there was a lot of discussion in our working group is, okay, did we now miss an attack, and should this product have failed our certification? Or is this attack maybe too expensive? Is it above the attack potential? So it's correct that we did not miss it, that we did not fill this thing on. This took quite a few discussions to get clear. And in the very first part of it, we made these ratings. So for those of you who don't remember the old CC, the old CC has two phases of an attack, and an identification phase where you try to find the exploit, and the exploitation phase where you do mass exploitation of you. And so that's, I think the exploitation phase is where the criminal makes the money, and identification is the R&D process for making that attack. And it has all kinds of factors where we rate it in, but the most important part of that one is just how much time, expertise, and technology did it take this person. And that was an interesting discussion. So one of the things in this was this person who was doing that came from an attack lab. And even though he did his attack in his garage, he did it in a garage with a focused ion beam station, a thing that it's about $1 million, I think, to acquire. It's not an easy device to use. But a device we consider a valid attack tool. And then the question became, okay, how long did he take? Calculate, making all the decisions. In the end, we came to the conclusion, look, this is way beyond what a normal attacker would be able to do. Took him more time, he had more expertise, had a lot of tools that are not available to the big market, calculation more than 31 points. But it does give an idea on that we do these kind of feedback loops. We see, okay, this is broken, this seems to be broken in our system. Can we check that our calculations still work? So something I'll use later in talking about the mobile devices. What is typical in this traditional hardware world, and I'm saying traditional because it's 15, 20 years old, is that you don't see this attacker trying to attack it. We didn't see Tarnovsky in his garage. We don't see an attacker who is trying to attack a pin entry device. We don't see a router being bought out of eBay and somebody playing with it. It's invisible. It's actually even invisible during the exploitation phase. It's only at the moment that somebody typically is really stupid and get caught. It's the moment where this pin entry bug is being entered and the henchman is caught, or a financial system triggers and says, this is weird, we're paying more money than we actually are getting, this something is wrong. Only at that point we really have visibility. So you see that in the hardware domain, we want to make really sure that even though an attacker has 3-5 months worth of work, it's still secure. Because once it's in the exploitation, it's invisible for a long time, and then we can't recover. Smart cards, so the payment cards that you have, or the Apple Pay that's in your phone, or the Android version, all are embedded systems. Now, imagine that there is some sort of vulnerability in there, and you just say, okay, come back with your iPhone, your Android phone, or even your credit card, and replace this. Nobody does that. So it's too expensive to do. There's no easy patching mechanism. So the vulnerability of these systems stays high for a long time. So that's the way we balance our look at the vulnerability analysis. We also do these things for the site security. As I just said, if somebody could put in a backdoor in a product, even though it was known in the field, even though you know there is a backdoor in this payment chip, you still can't really recover from that. So you have to prevent somebody from doing that. So we have high requirements on site security. We have high requirements on what kind of crypto is allowed, or we know how to rate, how much remaining bits have to be there after the best attack, which is fairly high. So we have lots of discussions on these things and then capture it in a document. But I think the most useful component from an evaluation technical side is the composition that we're doing. So a typical smart card evaluation starts by looking at an IC, a hardware. It'll add a crypto library on top of that. It'll add a Java card on top of that. And at this point, you have a sort of embedded Java, which allows you to boot Java applets on top. And that whole thing is finally something you can use. It's finally a payment card or an e-passport or something, a governmental ID card. So how do we do this? Well, we look at the hardware evaluation with one protection profile, because at a certain point it had to be updated from CC version 2.x to 3.x, and we wanted to streamline something. It got renumbered to 84, but it's essentially one protection profile. And it says, okay, this is hardware that allows us to make secure software on top of it. It doesn't leak too much. It doesn't break too much if you shoot your laser at it. We evaluate that. We add a crypto library typically on top of that, which allows you to use this hardware in more advanced ways. So typically the hardware will do DES, AES in hardware, but it will not do ECC or RSA or Diffie-Hellman type crypto. So crypto libraries will do that. But to make a secure crypto library on this hardware, you need to know the behavior of this hardware. You need to know this is the place where it starts to leak. This is the place that it starts to do weird things if you shoot the laser at it. And this hardware might be made by one vendor and the crypto library by his competitor. So you don't want to give all the vulnerabilities of this hardware to the competitor. So we have a document called the ETR for composition. Evaluation technical report is the total set of evaluation. And for composition is a subset specifically made to communicate everything that the underlying evaluation learned to the upper one. So what was evaluated? What are the things that you have to take care of? What was tested? What was not tested? Did we find something that isn't a problem for the hardware, but is something you have to keep in mind in the crypto library or at top layers? Are there settings that we really, really, really advise to be set? All of that has to be captured in the guidelines, in the manuals, the programming guidelines. The programming guidelines of these things are thick, not always easily readable, right? It's easy to miss things. So the ETR for composition allows one lab to tell the other lab, look, be careful for these things. You need to arrange these things. Or don't redo this work. You already did this evaluation work. You don't need to do it again. So we do that same thing to the Java card layer, allowing applets to be separated, and then we put applets on it. And this is the point, as I said, that we have a full product. This is something that you probably have in your travel bag. So in my bag is an e-passport. My bag is a credit card that has these things. This is all built in this way. So if you look currently at the CC portal, there are about 50 e-passports valid. And there's some double counting because a given product might have multiple configurations. Digital signature cards is an EU thing that you can make digital signatures and has to be with an accredited card. Or digital tachograph, also EU rules. Travel systems do use this. Payment cards use this a lot. Typically, payments cards will go with their own certification brand after this. So for the complete card, they'll go for the EMV port. But they build on the CC ports. All of this is fun. But there is also a time limit to these things. So every 3 to 4 years, we have a completely new attack. And one of the labs, or an academic, but typically one of the labs, figures out that, if I use this color laser, it works even better. If I look at these signals in this way, I can get more out. So in the smart card world, we say, OK, after evaluation, after the certification, the validity of this certificate for reuse, for composition, is only 1.5 years. Because after that, it degrades so fast that it's not useful anymore. So as we're stacking these evaluations on top, the crypto library is typically done near the end of the hardware. It's typically almost at the same day that the hardware is certified, the crypto library will get certified. Java Card has to wait for all of this, so it'll be a bit later, and the applet is even later. So that thick blue arrow indicates just how short a time is left after all of these evaluations. So to cover that, one of the things we do is re-evaluate this hardware and the crypto library, and to address any bug fixes or typically functionality fixes, speed fixes that are in there, but mostly to see is it still protected against the current state of affairs. So if you think this is a complex thing to handle, the same thing happens with all the sites that are involved. They too are only 1.5 year valid for a similar reason. They change too fast. So in a typical developer environment, there are project managers who are solely working on making sure that all of these certifications are stacked in the right way. So, any questions on smart cards?
How much all of this costs?
How much does it cost? Thank you. It's hard to tell. I'll give you ballpark numbers for what a typical evaluation site will cost. It's hard to tell how much the developer internally costs, and it depends, amongst others, how do you calculate an hour of the lead engineer, right? Most developers I talk with, they don't really know. They don't know how to measure that. But the evaluation is clearer because it's out-of-pocket cost. So a hardware evaluation very first would be 300,000 to 500,000 euros to the evaluation lab. Depends a bit on scope and iterations and things like that. Re-evaluations will be 100,000 to 200,000, something like that. Certification cost depends a bit on which of these certification bodies you use. Most of them are government, so the cost to them is negligible. But the timing is quite unpredictable. So the time to market is typically a big problem, which is one of the reasons why the Dutch scheme has the commercial certifiers with more capacity. And it's about 1/10 of that cost, of the cost of the evaluation. So it's expensive because these things sell for, I think, something like $1 a piece. So it's a significant chunk of that cost is in the evaluation part. And the only reason they're doing that is because governments and the credit card companies require it. Timing hardware is something depends a bit on how experienced everyone is, but let's say 1.5 years. Crypto libraries will be something like around 1/2 year. Java card will be something like 1 year. And applets are typically 3 months. It depends a bit on how big they are, because they use a lot of the underlying stuff. All of that gets extra time with communication cycles that tends to eat months. And something has to be fixed, and then somebody has to be assigned to that. And those things eat up time in the whole process. Does that sort of answer your question? Any other questions? I still have a few
questions.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
How long did it take the group to go from what I would imagine were competing interests across the different labs mm-hmm. and vendors to a group that actually contributed, worked together to come to solutions and solve the problems?
Yeah, so how quickly does it gel? It's a bit hard to remember because it's 15 plus years ago, but I would say, Tony, I'm looking a bit at you, 5-ish years, 6 probably. Partly it's an ongoing.
I was going to say, depends when you sell the talk,
but
yeah, at least.
And so there is this 5-6 year-ish start time, and it's a constant ongoing process for us to put attention to that. And I so one of the things that you see us do is that we'll have you see smart car people sit together and have beers together, and even though they're competitors, but we have a shared frustration about the process or shared celebration of that we actually have one equal playing field. So that takes a lot of effort. So these work, we have about 3 working groups that are relevant for this. They each meet every 2 months for a day, sometimes more. The JHAS, the attack group, is about 35 participants. Working group one is about a dozen. So that's several full-time equivalent investments by everyone. And the only...
I think the other thing is to note that it didn't start off in anything like the state that it's in now. I mean, it started off with much more to be improved as it went. So it's a little bit like CPPs in that regard. Getting the engagement of those people for those times, some of it was just start with what we know and then improve it.
Very, and it's still to this day very strongly driven by the developer saying, look, come together, we want one set. So just to transition this to mobile phones, as people near to me have pointed out, I sometimes watch my phone in the environment. I really should be looking at the rest of the site. Of course, at a certain point, this becomes a pose that is mandatory. But it does show that these phones are now rapidly becoming a very important piece of our lives. And now we already have payment on this. We already have... In my hotel, I can access my room and the elevator. The elevator, for some reason, was the most impressive for me, is that you use your app and the app tells the elevator to go up. And so you need some sort of secure storage on these things. Now, there are two options. One is essentially putting a smart card in the phone, which is what's happening, and the other one is to put an app with some sort of obfuscation that constantly talks to a backend system. And how are we doing on time? Okay. So to make that really quick, one of the things that happens there is that instead of this model where you see an attacker only when he gets caught because he did something stupid, in this commercial and these app domains where an app is constantly communicating with a backend system what it's seeing, in these systems what happens is that you can see an attacker coming. So these backend systems that are using attestation, they can see a debugger being attached to an application. And they're saying, that's interesting. These attackers are trying to chip away at our security. And at the moment they get close to breaking the first layer, we just re-obfuscate the whole thing, maybe change something, and push out the applet again. It's worldwide, it's every applet can be forced to update immediately. So essentially you deploy things in days and then the attacker can start again. So the attacker starts to get stuck in this identification loop, which means that in terms of this rating, instead of looking at how much time can an attacker really spend on doing this attack, we now have a limit of, okay, this attacker cannot spend more than 3 months because this product doesn't exist for longer than that. So the obsolescence of the applications is actually the thing that feeds into this rating system. And that has been quite a difficult thing to explain, because on one hand you're saying I evaluate something and the reason it's safe is because in 3 months it will be a different product. There's solutions for this, but I'll have to leave that as a teaser for later. Thank you.
You want me to stop the timer, or can you go?
I'll give you a 5-minute wave. 5-minute wave.
Okay.